Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me once again Amir Adnani, the President and CEO of Uranium Energy. Thanks for joining me again, Amir.
Hi, Jay. Good to reconnect.
It's always good to reconnect with you. You're always the optimist, but also the realist, and you're also an executive that is a patient, long-term investor who knows how to buy things cheap and sell them dear. And you certainly have picked an asset. You've had a lot of time to buy things cheap. Uranium has been on the ground, has really been a depressed commodity for quite a while now. But it looks like things are about to get better, right?
Things are gradually improving. And then, you know, if you get enough gradual improvement over a number of years, you start to hopefully have a setup where you can see a breakout. And I think we're seeing that kind of development, Jay, where things have been gradually getting fundamentally better. Last year, nuclear energy generation globally recovered to levels pre-Fukushima, or the levels we were at pre-Fukushima, the situation in Japan 8 years ago. That's a good fundamental turning point. And you look at basically a record number of reactors being connected to the grid. Maybe not record, but something like the best numbers in 25 years, which is, again, shows we're in the right trend. And you've had just some really positive signals. But I think the one catalyst that's really fascinating, and you and I have touched on it, is this U.S. government investigation into uranium and the national security implications that it could have, or it does have. And I think that could be the development that really could be a game changer for a company like UEC with U.S. assets, and having been pounding the table for 14 years saying that, hey, there's a shortage of uranium in the U.S. being mined, and this doesn't look right. And now I think finally this is something that's being felt very seriously.
Mm-hmm. All right, Amir, let's go into that a little bit. The number of pounds that are being produced in the U.S., it's less than 1 million pounds. I think you said something like 400,000 this year is projected. But we consume 55 million pounds, something like that. Do I have that right?
Yeah, I totally have it right. I mean, said differently, there's 98 operating reactors in the U.S. That, by the way, makes the U.S. As the country that has the largest nuclear fleet in the world. And annual requirements are, as you say, about 45 million pounds. U.S. mines are projected to produce less than 400,000 pounds in 2019. So that's not enough for even one reactor. And that's pretty astounding when you think about 98 reactors operating, and there's not going to be enough uranium mined domestically for the needs of even one out of 98. So I think this actually is the type of thing where, you know, some people look at the U.S. government action as being somewhat related to something that only maybe President Trump would do. But I actually think this is quite a bipartisan issue. To really kind of demonstrate that, just a couple of weeks ago, Jay, the President signed the Nuclear Energy Modernization Act into law. And it was a bipartisan measure. And in fact, we're seeing very strong bipartisan support on Capitol Hill. And it's driven by two factors. There's definitely improving public opinion towards nuclear power. And many of the previous organizations, climate organizations, that were against nuclear power, you know, we're talking about the Sierra Club or the Union of Concerned Scientists, they're not coming out and they're speaking in support of nuclear power because they recognize you can be an environmentalist and not support nuclear power. If you want to reduce whether it's climate issues around temperature and global warming, or whether you just want to decarbonize the economy, the renewables are just not generating enough electricity around the clock to meet those needs. The only source of baseload power generation that's 24/7 around the clock and totally CO2 emission free is nuclear power. And so this is really what's driving this bipartisan support. So coming back to the government investigation into uranium, this is one of those things where, again, I don't think people should confuse it with being just, you know, whether you hate Trump or love Trump, don't confuse this as being something that only he or the Republican Party supports. The Democrats get the importance of clean nuclear power for clean electricity. Republicans get it. They're getting behind it in a big way. And we can't be relying on Russia for all of our uranium. You know, if you look at Russia and Soviet, former Soviet Union countries, Jay, majority, 40% of uranium being imported into the U.S. is from former Soviet Union countries, including Russia. So this doesn't add up to be a plausible case. Now, I know people argue and say, well, steel and aluminum, you know, did we really need the tariffs? But that, you know, honestly, the national security argument there was not nearly as powerful as it is here. In the case of uranium, there really is a national security case to be made. And the U.S. is way over dependent on foreign uranium than it should be, not just for power generation, but don't forget the Department of Defense and nuclear navy for medicinal purposes, all of that. Uranium gets used up in some really key industries.
Yeah, well, we have, I suppose a lot of Americans are going to say, well, we have our friends to the north, your country, Amira. Canada is a major producer of uranium. Why don't we just rely on Canada?
Excellent question. And the reality is even the Canadian mines cannot make money. I mean, I think the listeners need to really pay attention to this point, which is the biggest and most successful and first-tier mine in Canada, MacArthur River, which is in sort of central north part of Canada and northern Saskatchewan. That mine was shut down last summer. It was shut down because the company that owns and operates it cited low uranium prices. And so this is definitely one of those situations where the friendly neighbor to the north that historically could be a reliable source of natural resources, uranium price has been so low for so long because of the issues that we saw with an oversupplied market that even that mine at today's uranium price can't make money. And so it really comes down to one of these things where I think if you're looking at the importance of nuclear energy, Jay, just last week, a handful of CEOs of U.S. nuclear energy companies went to visit with the president and talk about the importance of nuclear energy, not just as a source of power generation domestically, but as an export industry where you can create really a lot of high-paying jobs associated and attached with it. You had Bill Gates. You know, Bill Gates was on Capitol Hill just 3 weeks ago advocating for nuclear power, talking about how he's putting a lot of his own money behind innovation and research and development in the field of nuclear energy. I mean, it's really, these are things that you and I have never really seen before, this much support for the industry, for nuclear technology, from a very varied sort of group of people. Bill Gates in particular, I mean, he's become a big champion, and he really believes the key is in U.S. technology. And, Jay, you can't have all this great nuclear technology if you don't have the basic fuel, the uranium, that is needed to power, whether it's small modular reactors or large reactors.
Okay, so there's some investigation now going on within the government to determine to what extent this is a national security issue. Do you have any idea when we might hear something from the government on that topic, on that matter?
It's really a spring-summer expectation. We expect to hear something in the spring or summer, it would be, this is something that we're just going to have to wait and see, Jay. I mean, it could be possibly quotas, the possibility that U.S. utilities will have to buy a certain percentage of their needs from U.S. mined uranium. It could be tariffs. It could be a combination of the two. We don't know. What we do know is that the timetable should be spring or at the very latest this summer to have the final determinations.
All right. So, I mean, that should. The uranium price is what now, Amir? What's UE3 selling at now?
The uranium price has been fairly flat since the beginning of the year at around $29 per pound. The incentive price to build new uranium projects is anywhere between $50 to $65 per pound. So we still need to see a meaningful increase in the uranium price before any kind of project development can take place. But that's what's so exciting, I think, about this opportunity, Jay, is the fact that, it's the commodity price really has to move meaningfully higher before there's, again, the incentive price and the right economic environment. And I think that's kind of where you know, we've been preparing over the last few years, not only buying assets, but really using this downturn as an opportunity to permit projects. You know, permitting is the long lead item in building mines in the U.S. It takes six to 7 years to get permits. And so you have a situation where you can have, you know, a very high uranium price. You can have lots of money as a company, but if you don't have permits, you can't build and operate. And so when you look at the assets that we now have in Texas and Wyoming, these are fully permitted for production. We don't need to go through that 6 to 7 year period. We've already been through it, and it's kind of very painful and boring and long, and but you got to do it, right? And that's why the projects that we develop in the U.S. really benefit from being safe, modern, and environmentally friendly because there's such a rigorous permitting process in place. So I'm excited about the fact that, you know, we have this setup.
You have your in-situ recovery is a very low impact, very low, a very environmentally friendly process, and it's also low cost. Amir, can you give us some idea, because you have some production history, albeit limited in the past, you have some production history from your South Texas facility. Can you give us an idea what your cost is per pound and also what you are planning to do to get ready for this potential rise in price resulting from some of these factors that we're just discussing?
Well, we just announced recently that we'll be commencing work on an economic study at our Reno Creek project in Powder River Basin of Wyoming, that we're commencing development drilling and drilling related to permitting at our Burke Hollow project in South Texas. And so we're expecting to be very active and busy in the coming months with kind of advancing our projects on two fronts, with projects that are in-situ recovery, as you point out. This is a very low-cost way of mining uranium using solution in deposits that are sandstone basin hosted. And it's really the type of mining that the U.S. has the greatest amount of history with. And so the regulators get it, the operators get it. Our company, as you say, we have an operating track record as having previously operated our Palangana uranium mine in South Texas, where our cash cost came in just under $22 per pound, which is very competitive on a global, if you look at a global cost curve, most sort of first-tier, first-quartile mines are sub-$30 per pound cost. And so even if you look at our project's cost on a fully loaded basis with taxes, royalties, this is a project that could be just under $30 per pound for production. But to have cash cost of less than $22 per pound not only gives us the ability to say, look, we have a low-cost operation, but also really establishes proof of concept where you can demonstrate that as a company and as a team, you have the experience and the wherewithal to execute on both exploration development and the mining side of uranium. There's a real shortage of skilled labor in this area too. I mean, a lot of people, you can imagine in the last 7 or 8 years or even 10 years, you didn't get up and say, geez, I better go get a job in the uranium mining business, right? I mean, it just, there's been no jobs. The people, I tell you, like even 4 years ago, Jade, I think there was over 1,000 people employed in the industry in the U.S., and today it's less than 400. So we've lost a lot of jobs, which is really unfortunate. But the companies and people, the companies like you, you see that have kept the key people, the key experience, that human capital is very precious and it's very scarce and it becomes a competitive advantage because now you can move faster, right? Because if there's any kind of price signal that incentivizes development of U.S. uranium projects, this is going to be a foot race to see who can build mines and who can develop and be a producer faster in the U.S. And UEC really stands to win that foot race because we've got the people, the permits, and the resources and infrastructure, right? The Hobson processing plant where we can process our own uranium. It's fully built. It's fully permitted.
All right, Amir, we're going to have to leave it go at that because we're really out of time. But so what price then do you need? Something north of $30, I suppose, $35 or so before you start to and think about getting back into production?
Yeah, we want to see a price really for our existing projects like Palangana between $40 to $45. For new projects, we want to see a price closer to $50. That's very much in line and, in fact, on the lower end of where any feasibility study done globally shows projects. I think most projects, hard rock mines, need $65 to $75 per pound as incentive price to come online.
All right, we'll have to leave it go at that. It's Uranium Energy for any Uranium Energy Corporation, trades in the New York Stock Exchange, UEC symbol. I saw it at $1.41 earlier today. Amir, it's a pleasure catching up with you again. Really great story, and I'm sure we'll want to talk to you again sometime, perhaps this spring, when we find out more about the government's position in this very strategic metal. Thanks so much for being with us.
Look forward to it. Thank you, Jay.